Chapter 7. Gideon heard his commanding officer, but he disagreed with her assessment. She might be able to see what was going on, but she couldn't necessarily put it together the way he could, and he had an idea. Out of the corner of his eye, Gideon saw the other three partisans get to their feet. They were good. Their body language conveyed nothing out of the ordinary. If it hadn't been for Sen's translation... "Okay," he said to Shirima, "but I'm getting the data chip first." "No way," said the Pantoran. "You'll get it when Bok and I are both on the ship." Gideon kept his eyes on the bracelet's clasp. He hoped the droid, and therefore Del, had too. Del seemed like a very intelligent and observant man. Gideon hoped the former engineer had figured out what he himself had. "I think your friends might have something to say about that," Gideon drawled. "And I don't want them detonating their bombs before you have a chance to give that chip to me." Everything happened at once. Both Shirima and Bok looked over at their approaching companions. Even as their eyes widened, there came the distinctively distorted shout of an armored stormtrooper.
"Stop right there!"
Quick as a thought, the droid sprang from its perch on Gideon's shoulder and extended its pincers. Two of them snipped through the wire upon which the bomb gems were looped. A third, slender, mechanical arm snatched the chip and retracted, secreting it somewhere inside the droid's metallic innards. The fourth was reaching to catch the seven miniature bombs as they tumbled toward the floor, but Gideon was faster. He grabbed them in one hand before they hit, and closed his other hand tightly around them. Bok and Shirima had risen, and Bok was staring in open-mouthed horror at Gideon. The other two partisans were yelling something and had almost reached Gideon's table. "Go!" he shouted to the droid. It rose straight in the air and zipped over the head of the now wary patrons toward the front of the bar. A stormtrooper stood there, blaster raised. Gideon was almost certain it was Aiden. Almost. He sprang onto his chair, then the table, knocking over the Bespin breezes, and then he too was racing out of the singularity towards the corridor. As his feet hit the metal flooring and put distance between him and the erupting chaos of the singularity, Gideon flung the small, brightly colored, lethal orbs behind him, just as he heard the scream of blaster fire. Then, suddenly, a plastoid-gloved hand seized his arm, yanked him forward, and shoved him farther away from the explosion that momentarily deafened him. He landed hard, and for a horrible second, he couldn't breathe. Then he was hauled to his feet by the stormtrooper. No, Aiden. Aiden, who'd blocked the worst of the blast with her own armor-covered body. And they were racing down the corridors. Gideon's lungs hurt from breathing the overheated air. His whole body hurt, but he ran. More beings pelted past them, fleeing the blast. Others surged toward them, including a cluster of actual stormtroopers. "Rebel bombing! Back of the Singularity!" Aiden shouted. Two of them clattered to a halt, obviously confused that she was running in the opposite direction. Aiden waved them on, gesturing at Gideon, whom she still gripped tightly. "I got this! Go! Go!" Through her heads-up display, Aiden saw the ID-10's careening journey as it zipped along through the corridors at high speed, dodging the panicked throngs and largely ignored. Then the little droid was safely in the ship. Aiden found herself staring into an almost alarming close-up of Miko's concerned face. "What happened?" Then he amended at once. "Never mind. Just grunt if you're both okay." "Yeah," she managed. Relief spread over Del's face like a sunrise.
"Thank goodness. We're monitoring the response to the bombing. Lots of panic, but no one's on to you. I'm doing some editing on the security recordings, and Keitan and Moro have the Corvus ready to leave the second you two get here."
"Copy that," Aiden gasped. Miko's face disappeared, and the droid turned its photoreceptors to the console. It was hovering above Sen, who was, as promised, working frantically at the console. The younger woman glanced up at the droid, and Aiden saw worry furrowing her brow. Then Sen returned her attention to her task. They were almost there. Sen tensed.
"Inferno One, you've got company coming behind you!"
"Damn," Aiden blurted, furious. She and Gideon rounded a corner and found the corridor beautifully empty. They stumbled into the hangar to see the ramp was down. Waiting for them was Del Mico, lean and lanky and thin-lipped with intensity, standing with a blaster at the ready.
"Trooper, halt!"
cried a voice behind Iden. There was no time for this. No time to explain to the poor grunt just doing his job that she was cleared. No time to do anything but shove Gideon forward to run to the ship by himself while Iden whirled, switching her blaster to stun to hold off her fellow stormtroopers. She fired directly at them. They staggered backward, some of them falling. She kept firing circles of blue energy as she went up the ramp, and Del did the same. The ramp retracted and the door slammed shut. Iden and Del tumbled into seats beside Gideon and grabbed for the crash webbing. "Go! Go!" Iden shouted to the pilots, and the Corvus rose, hovered for a second as it continued to be bombarded with lasers, and then escaped to open space. 10 seconds later, white light streaked past, and they were in hyperspace. Failed. I failed. Iden yanked off her helmet and whirled on Gideon. "What the hell, Hask?" she demanded, cold fury making her voice shake. She hated that and fought to get herself under control. "You deliberately disobeyed a direct order!" Gideon looked stunned at her outburst for a second. Then his black brows drew together in a thunderous frown of his own. "This mission turned toxic the instant Bok showed up with an entourage." Zen's normally girlish voice was acidic with disapproval. "We should have aborted immediately. Now we've attracted undue attention and possibly jeopardized one of our key agents." "Your agent is fine," said Gideon. "No one will connect him with this now that everyone's dead?" Iden finished. "Was that what you were about to say? Damn it, people, our job was not that hard. Get one person to safety without being noticed. Now he's dead, his friend is dead." Gideon cut her off. "Yeah, that's right. 5 partisans are dead, casualties of their own violence when their terrorist bombing went terribly wrong. That means it's very likely that the Dreamers are the only ones left." But Sen wasn't buying it. "Irrelevant. This mission was to extract Bok and obtain information from him. And now he's dead and we're no better. No, we are worse off than we were before. By any measure, it's a failure." Her eyes flashed. "Initial security recordings indicate that 2 of our potential Imperial blackmail victims were wounded in the blast as well. We are very fortunate they weren't killed." "Our contact's dead," Iden thought to herself. "Gideon killed him. Sen's right. By any measure, it's a failure." "Captain Versio?" It was Miko, sounding a little sheepish. "I may not agree how this went down, but we may not have blown the intent of the mission." Iden stayed silent for a moment, hardly daring to hope. Then she said to Miko, "Did I see what I think I saw there? Before Gideon decided to unleash hell?" Gideon's lips thinned at the comment. "Droid, show us what you've got," Del instructed the ID-10. It had fastened itself securely to the Corvus's bulkhead for the jump to hyperspace. Now it bleeped, detached itself, and floated over to Miko. It extended one of its arms. In its metallic pincers, it grasped a data chip the size of Iden's pinky fingernail. Carefully, Iden took the chip, holding it by the edges, and handed it to Sen. The younger woman was silent, then she turned and inserted it into the console. Letters from a variety of alphabets, including pictographic ones, along with numerals, flashed rapidly on the screen. "It's encrypted, of course," Sen murmured almost to herself. "But you may be right. We may not have Bok, but we might have some of what he knew." Gideon and Iden regarded each other.
"Apology accepted," Gideon said at last.
"Oh, I'm not apologizing," Iden replied stonily. "To any of you. Hask, you disobeyed a direct order and put yourself, your commanding officer, and the rest of the team in jeopardy." She looked over at Sen. "Morana, you did not suggest that we abort the mission. You demanded it, twice. Miko, you aided Gideon's disobedience when you decided to have your pet project snatch the data chip and abscond with it," she finished. Everyone was quiet. Iden ran a hand through her sweat-damp hair and sighed. "And, as it turned out, Sen, you were right," Iden admitted.
The situation was dangerous, and we should have gotten out right away and planned a second rendezvous. Gideon, you retrieved a data chip we hope will prove to be full of useful information, and by your actions, we've eliminated 5 known partisans. And Del, your quick thinking got us the chip before said partisans decided to take matters into their own hands.
There was a long, awkward silence.
Permission to speak freely? Gideon asked after a strained moment. Go ahead.
Thanks for the... He broke off and amended. Thanks for the acknowledgement.
Aiden smiled thinly and nodded.
She took a deep breath.
Now we just have to present this to Admiral Versio in a way that looks like we are still a smoothly functioning machine. The droid, an actual smoothly functioning machine, booped in what sounded like sympathy. As it turns out, while Admiral Versio was not at all happy with how things had gone down, he surprised Aiden with his final opinion at their debriefing in his office.
Anyone can craft the perfect plan for how a mission should go, he told them.
Aiden's stomach tightened.
But the execution is something else again. I've spoken with Bok's contact. He was surprised to learn that Bok had changed the terms of the deal. If he, who had worked with the Sulliston for months, had not expected the, twist, you could not be expected to.
Aiden blinked. She had not anticipated such magnanimity from her father. Whatever else he'd learned must have pleased him greatly.
As it had always been the intention to terminate Bok, once he had revealed his information, I believe we lost very little. What was on the chip was extremely useful, and the entire...
He searched for the word.
Turn of events during your mission might work in our favor.
Aiden waited. It might not have been a disaster, but it was bad enough. It wasn't perfect. So she waited for him to single out the others for their responses. Waited for him to give the position of leader to someone else. He did not. After a moment, she said,
May we be informed about what you learned from the chip, sir?
In due time, and as it pertains to your mission, Captain, Versio said.
He sat down at the head of the table.
Aiden blinked.
It was the first time ever that her father had sat down in a professional meeting. He folded his hands.
I've made the decision to expand Inferno Squad's responsibilities in order to best utilize the information we have obtained on the partisans, he said. As you will recall, I described the squad as being cleaners, tracking down and recovering sensitive information, informants, defectors, and so on, usually with quick precision attacks or incursions. For instance, your recent mission to the Telic 4 station, both planned and how it actually unfolded, was a military extraction operation. Despite the complications, you succeeded. You'll still be cleaners, but your next mission is going to be reminiscent of your first one. If all goes well, this could mean the end of the Dreamers in a single swoop.
The 4 exchanged glances, but they all held their tongues.
As was discussed earlier, the Rebel Alliance has a mostly unified front, while the Partisans have always preferred to operate in 1 or 2 small cells with little or no connection.
The most recent intel says that with the explosion on Singularity, the Dreamers is the sole remaining functional Partisan cell. I've already told you that the Dreamers have likely obtained what could be potentially devastating intel. The information on the recovered data chip, among other things, appears to confirm this.
There wasn't any murmuring. Not quite. But the room was filled with swift intakes of breath and the creaking of chairs as their occupants shifted.
It might seem that the logical thing would be to simply go in and destroy it. While that would indeed wipe out the enemy in one attack, We'd also be destroying our chance to discover how the intel has fallen into the partisan hands, who knows about it, and who controls the data flow. And so that means we need Inferno Squad to not just extricate information, but infiltrate the Dreamers. Iden caught movement out of the corner of her eye. It was Sen. She did not look at all comfortable with this statement. Truth be told, Iden wasn't either. But she had learned not to question, just to do, succeed, excel. That was what Versios did. Any questions before I go over your specific assignments?
I have one, sir, Sen said. We have agents trained precisely for this sort of thing, and we've even attempted to infiltrate the partisans before. Why is Inferno Squad being sent instead of another ISB agent?
A smile quirked the Admiral's lips. Do you think you aren't up to it, Lieutenant? I can certainly replace you on the squad, if so.
Sen stiffened. Of course I am, sir. But I'm wondering why you think this team is a better choice.
You've answered your own question, Lieutenant. ISB has, indeed, sent in agents before. None of them was successful. We can't afford to fail this time. I have nothing but respect for the brave agents of the ISB. The partisans, especially the Dreamers, are a military group, not a corporation or a government organization. Any agents sent in would also have to be trained to operate a variety of weapons and vessels. You will all see a lot of action, and you'll be asked to do things you might find distasteful. Up to and including possibly having to actively participate in attacks against your own people to protect your cover. Iden blinked. That hadn't occurred to her. The Empire was certainly not overly compassionate. It understood sacrifice and duty, unlike the rebels. But this quietly horrified her. Then she thought about the partisans, who had shown up at a bar wearing bombs disguised as jewelry and hardened her heart. She did understand sacrifice. If she had to kill some Imperials to save the rest, to save all of what the Empire stood for, she would do it. Considering all that, I feel this assignment is a superb opportunity to showcase all that Inferno Squad is capable of. And then Iden understood. She'd seen this type of behavior from her father before. Whatever was on that ship was something Garrick Versio thought he could turn to his advantage. Inferno Squad had been his brainchild. Its success, Iden's success, would be his. She was conflicted. On one hand, he was using the team to climb his way higher in the eyes of the Emperor. On the other hand, he thought enough of her to involve her in his continued rise to power. His eyes, almost reptilian in their flat coldness, roamed over the four of them. If anyone feels they cannot complete this mission as I have outlined it, please speak up now. There was silence. As I thought. Now to the details. The data chip revealed the following. Versio began to tick points off on his fingers. First, it confirmed our suspicions that the Dreamers have indeed acquired sensitive information. The group is led by a man known only as Staven. We have apprehended Staven, and until Saw's death, he was rotting in a prison cell. Somehow he managed to escape, and he has apparently kept himself quite busy gathering hardcore recruits who are passionate about Saw and his mission. Anyone else named other than Staven? No, unfortunately. That might have been Bok's contribution had he survived. Iden tightened her jaw. Her father continued. We do, however, have the names of a few notable Dreamer sympathizers. And finally, we know the Dreamer's next target. Iden schooled her face to remain calm. But inwardly, her heart leapt. She knew that the others struggled similarly. We've run all of this data by intel, and it looks sound as far as we are able to determine, Versio continued. The one thing we don't know, however, is where the Dreamers are based, Which means we'll need to convince them to take us there. Versio allowed himself a slight smile at their confusion. Here's how this is going to work. The Dreamers are planning an attack approximately 2 standard weeks from now. We're going to let it proceed unhindered. Versio had not exaggerated his warning to them. The very first thing they would be doing in this infiltration mission would be allowing people to die. Versio directed their attention to a holo projector in the table. A space station that looked like it had been haphazardly thrown together rather than deliberately designed turned slowly in the center. "This is Otor's hub," Versio said. "It's located in the Ojoster section of the Outer Rim. It's a popular way station for travelers."
"So sort of like Telic 4?" Miko asked.
"Telic 4 is a fairly straightforward refueling and repair station and operates formally within the auspices of the Empire. This place is far more unsavory. Most of its merchants deal in the black market or the slave market. There is a small cluster of merchants there who do a bit of spying for us on the side. They know to notify us if a person of interest patronizes their shop or if a certain item crosses their path. It's a loose association, but a useful one. It turns out that the Dreamers have discovered our involvement with the merchants, and they've decided to put an end to it. That sort of enterprise isn't really in keeping with the data leak you're concerned with, sir," Gideon said. "It seems more personal than political." "It does. And it likely is," Versio agreed. "But the partisans have ever been ones to smart against the perceived insult and hold grudges. That is entirely in keeping with their operation. I regret the necessity of sacrificing these merchants. They've been useful over the years. But I'm certain others will spring up to fill the vacuum."
Aiden was nodding, relaxing a little. She had no problem with the idea of money-grubbing black marketers on the receiving end of Dreamer justice, much preferable to the thought of sacrificing Imperial lives. Versio continued.
"There's one merchant who's mentioned specifically by name. A Dug, even more unpleasant than most of his species, known for dealing in antiquities, mostly fake, and information, mostly true. We will approach this rude Daga and inform him that Lieutenant Morana is one of our agents. She will pose as his slave. People will grow accustomed to her presence at the shop, so she won't attract any attention the day of the attack. He'll teach the lieutenant enough about the business so the partisans won't suspect her." Versio now spoke directly to the youngest member of the group. "You have an eidetic memory, and I've spoken with your superiors. Apparently, once you see something, you can replicate it, and you've done so on a few occasions previously."
"Yes, sir."
"Then you will claim you've been trained in forgery by your master. It's a valuable skill for the Dreamers to have. That, and your sad story of mistreatment by your master, will make it likely the Dreamers will take you with them once they've eliminated their targets."
The Admiral slid a data pad over to her.
"Your bio is here. Memorize it. And, as I'm certain you anticipated, we're going to have to do some work on you before you go. Per our standard operating procedure in these cases, everything we do, we'll undo at the completion of your assignment."
Aiden was confused. Sen seemed to know exactly what Versio meant, but Aiden was at a loss. So too, it seemed, was everyone else on the team.
"Excuse me, sir," Gideon ventured. "But what do you mean, work?"
It was Sen, not the Admiral, who answered.
"He means that my body is going to be altered to corroborate my cover story. It's commonplace for undercover operations like this."
She seemed calm, almost clinically detached from her words. With growing unease, Aiden found herself speaking up.
"Altered how?"
"As she is purporting to be an escaped slave, Lieutenant Morana will need to display visible signs of abuse," Versio said, in the same neutral, professional tone he might use to discuss his calf preference. "The question is, Do we want to make it appear that the injuries have been accumulated from long-term mistreatment, or recent? Scars, brands, calluses on her hands, that sort of thing. That sort of thing.
I see, Aiden said. Understood.
The thought of any member of her team having to be mutilated in order to fulfill the mission made her uncomfortable, but Aiden did understand. Everything rested on them being able to convince the partisans that they were sincere. And no one knew that better than Sen. If anything, the youngest member of the team would have suggestions as to how to make her own scarification more believable.
Once we're done with the meeting, there's a specialist I'd like you to consult with. You can go over the options together. Shum Lauder, perhaps you know him.
We've not met, but I've seen his work. It's entirely convincing.
Good.
Versio turned to the two young men.
Now, another useful thing we learned from the chip is that the Dreamers have a fairly regular supplier of food and often weapons. We have a plan for getting you aboard her ship, and she'll take you right to them. The two of you will be posing as a pair of brothers.
Aiden had to admit that it made sense. Both had dark hair, brown eyes, and similar features, although Gideon's skin was paler. But they were hardly alike in demeanor. She was an only child and had only the vaguest notion of how brothers would interact. The two men in question exchanged glances, then hid bemused smiles.
Your particular challenge will be to cultivate an extra layer of believability to convincingly pass as siblings. For the next week, not only will you live together in the same unit and share the same room, you'll eat all of your meals together, train together, and rehearse your stories together. By the time you're done, you should feel as though you truly do have a brother.
I have two brothers, Del said confidently.
We'll be fine. I expect no less, Agent. And if you do your jobs right and convince her, she'll take you with her. If you don't, make no mistake, she'll execute you on the spot.
How charming, Hask said. He'd mistaken the brother approach for lightness on Versio's part, and Aiden knew at once that it was a mistake. Versio narrowed his eyes.
She's a pirate, and her reputation is quite terrifying. Her group is called the Blood Bone Order. I've included information on your datapads. I suggest you read it thoroughly.
He passed them their datapads. Gideon accepted his without further comment.
Hask, you will present yourself as the pilot of the pair. Miko, you're the technician. Simple is always best, and remember, any lie is more effective if it holds some truth in it. Your droid will accompany you. Give some thought to what will serve a rebel group well, and tailor its upgrades to that.
They both replied, "Yes, sir," at the same time. Aiden straightened in her chair and looked at her father with a calm, expressionless face. Sen was to be a slave and have her body scarified for the role. The men were being drafted into a pirate's crew. What horror did her father have in store for her?
Now then, Admiral Versio said, as for your commanding officer, I have saved the best for last.
Aiden tensed. Versio turned to the rest of them.
Aiden will be leaving us shortly. She is to be stationed on a new Star Destroyer.
Aiden felt the blood drain from her face.
Sir?
Don't worry. You're taking different paths to get there, but you'll all eventually rendezvous.
Dismissed.
Aiden waited as the others filed out. Del cast a concerned glance back at her. Then the door closed, and she was alone with her father.
What do you have in mind for me, sir? As I said, you'll be stationed on a Star Destroyer.
I don't understand.
There was one final piece of information on that ship. The Dreamers themselves are emotionally rallying behind their founder, Saw. They want to realize his vision. But Saw is gone, and his name can no longer be used as the public face of the true partisans. They need a new one. We're giving them yours.